said I had all the answers.
And I also know what it's
I never
like
said I had all the answers.
Have the power to not ever say I have all the answers. Just know the power in Jesus' name. Is there, though, really? Come on.
I could die today.
I'd be a happy man.
Hey, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. That's what's next. Let's talk.
Yeah, I've seen angels.
You can think whatever you want. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, I'm not going to.
Is there a sin?
Yeah, the first time they arrested me. Now, maybe it was the second.
All right, let's talk about it.
We're going to talk about it.
Let's talk about it. I get it. I understand why you feel condemned and why you condemn yourself. And I have two things to say about that before we get started. It's number one, I remember hanging out with my buddy, Matt. Well, he became my buddy. He was actually the youth pastor of a girlfriend at the time, and met with her youth pastor. Sure. And he's like, what intentions do you have with my student? No, I'm just kidding. He didn't say that. But basically, one of the things I told him, I said, I constantly feel guilty. And he's like, why do you always feel guilty? I mean, do you believe in Jesus? Yes, I believe in Jesus. Have you been forgiven? Yes, I've been forgiven. Do you want to live for him? Yes. Do you want to live for him? And he's like, do you fail? Yeah, that's why I feel guilty. I fail on a daily basis. And he's like, man, you're covered by grace. You are loved by God. Nothing will change that. You are forgiven for yesterday sins, today sins, tomorrow sins. You are forever covered. And he's like, what are you guilty? What do you feel guilty about? Well, I feel guilty for one about wanting to sleep with your student. I didn't say that at the time, but he got it. And I feel guilty about the music I listen to. I feel guilty about a lot of things over and over again. But the idea is this, he's like, listen, you're caught in a battle, man. It's kind of like, what is it? Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You have your old self. You got your new self, the self that wants to please God, the self that is inspired to live according to God's plan for you. But you still have your old flesh, man, what you were born with. You've got that nature. They collide. They are opposed to one another. And I said, yeah, but I am so bad. And he said this. He said, you are bad. Yes, you are bad. And I was like, oh, okay. He just confirmed what I told him. And he's like, but there is a but with God, right? He's like, again, you are forgiven. You are in a relationship with him that is not based on what you can do, but what he has done for you. And now all you can do, man, is live for him the best that you know how and ask for him to inspire you to do so and give you the power to do what pleases him. And hey, awesome stuff. Like I get it. That makes sense. Like ultimately I am bad and I need to move forward to do what is good, created in his image, to live out a purpose that he has given to you. Don't live according to anybody else's image. Don't live according to anybody else's purpose because he's given you the best path. You're going to have eternal reward for going down his path and you're going to have peace here on the earth. So anyway, we're diving in. So we're talking about this woman. She's caught in adultery. She is dragged into a courtyard to be stoned by religious leaders. Think of them as pastors today. This woman is condemned. I can't say they're truly like pastors today because pastors today, if you are teaching Orthodox Christianity at any degree, then you understand that you are in this by a covenant of grace, a relationship of grace, and that you are also supposed to exercise that grace. Nonetheless, I know that some people, to tell you the truth, I know ladies that were shunned by the church, made to feel like dogs by the church leadership. I'm here to tell you that it's not that way across the board. It's not. I recently had this experience, and maybe I should share it a little later. Maybe we'll get into the text first, and then I will go into various experiences and things that I can share as we move along. So let's just do that, okay? So this woman, she's dragged into a courtyard. She's caught in adultery. All right. Jesus had just returned from the Mount of Olives. And this is the next morning. He's back at the temple. And a crowd has already gathered there. People are already there, which is pretty sweet. Like literally, they're there to worship. They're there to gather. They're doing their thing. He sat down and he just starts teaching people. And everybody loved to hear Jesus teach. He taught like nobody else that they had ever heard and with an authority they had never experienced. And as he was speaking, here they come. Teachers of religious law and the Pharisees brought this woman. They're dragging this woman along. And hey, that's the culture back then. Maybe it doesn't happen physically now, but it does happen. Who had been caught in the act of adultery, and they put her in front of the crowd. So right away, they're like, you know what? We know what she's done. We want you to know what she's done, and we're going to feel better about this. So, you know, we want everybody. We just want, like, we didn't do this. She did it. And Jesus automatically, obviously, would be assuming, like, dude, you've done even worse, okay? We all, like, to Jesus, you think it and you've done it. To Jesus, you thought about doing it and you did it in your mind. It was like reality, like as if you actually did it. They put her in front of the crowd. Teacher, they said. So they're like, all right, Jesus. Always looking for a way to trick him. This woman was caught in the act of adultery. Right away, Jesus would have been thinking, where's the guy? Where's the guy? You're dragging the woman up to me, but where's the guy? Verse 5, the law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say? And right away, that's their intent, man. They're picking up stones. They're ready to go at it. They want to kill this woman, right? And they're like, yeah, but Jesus, give us a reason to stone you. Give us a reason to accuse you. What do you say that we should do? And right away, Jesus is like, yeah. According, you know, he's thinking, this is what he's thinking, right? Is yes, according to the law of Moses, she does deserve to die. Moses gave you the law. I am here, Jesus would say, to establish a covenant of grace. I did not come to abolish the law. I came to complete it. I came to fulfill it. I came to bring the true meaning to light. So Jesus is thinking, these guys are just trying to trap me. They want to see if I'm going to go against the law of Moses, which will give them reason to come after me. And yet at the same time, if I'm like, go for it, yeah, stone her, then they could get the Roman Empire to come after me because they're the ones that are supposed to execute judgment. So they were trying to trap Jesus because they could ultimately accuse him of one thing or another. Like there was nothing that he could say where he would be able to just get away with it. Jesus stooped down. And what's he do? He starts writing in the dust, the dirt, with his finger. And yet to this day, we don't know what he's saying. We don't know what he's writing. We don't know. Only thing we know and we have here is he stoops down and he just starts drawing in the sand, in the dust. And they kept demanding an answer. So he's like, who knows how long this went on? So he stood up again and he said, all right. But let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. That man, that's thinking on your toes, right? This is the God man. He stoops down again and he starts writing in the dust. What's he doing? Is he like writing out these guys, their individual sins? Is he like just sketching it out? Like, is he writing it out for their interpretation? Are they basically seeing their own sins as they're staring at Jesus, watching him do this? Or are they just getting more upset? They're getting obviously emotional. What is he doing though? What is he writing? And these guys, listen, when the accusers heard this, something happened within them. They slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest. Hey, if you haven't sinned, go ahead, throw the first stone. Go ahead. How many stones today are thrown by those who, if just reminded by their own sin, if they would just recall what they had already done. I've met both, guys. I've met people who are extremely gracious and loving that I never thought would be because they had gone through an experience similar. They were forgiving. They were compassionate. They could understand. And then I could see those who were haughty and had been trying their whole life really hard, perhaps, but still had messed up, botched it up pretty bad. And yet they were really quick to accuse. They were really quick to make you feel bad. They were really quick to condemn, even though they could have been condemned for not only the same thing, but perhaps even greater things. So they're there. They start dropping stones from the oldest to the youngest one by one, because for some reason they knew that all of them knew they were not innocent. They were guilty. They were very well aware of what they would have done or have done. And perhaps even the thoughts that they were having in that moment. What if God was sending thoughts to them in that moment of things that they had done in the flesh? Maybe how they had all even woken up that day, their experience in that day as they awoke, thoughts they had, opportunity they had to do their own thing. Maybe they didn't take it, but maybe they were angry because they couldn't take it. And yet this woman's caught in adultery. Who knows if any of these guys actually wanted to be the one that was having an adulterous relationship with this woman. She could have been a good-looking girl. They could have actually just been angry and mad anyway. They catch her in adultery. They drag her away. Where's the guy? The guy, like, that's another thing, is they were already, like, not in compliance with the law of Moses, because the guy was supposed to be brought to trial as well. And he wasn't. He was nowhere to be found. But who knows? This is what I think about it, because I think this way. And, you know, if I think dirty, I think dirty. But I'm thinking maybe some of these guys wanted to sleep with that girl. Maybe some of these guys were a little jealous that she was not with them, right? That's a guy thing, I think. If she's good looking, it's like, man, well, I'm going to do the right thing, but she sure is good looking. And maybe I should consider, I don't know, this opportunity. Who knows? Like, whatever. But the idea is this, okay? They recognize that they, because of what Jesus does spiritually, maybe right there in the dust, writing down their own sins. He's the only one. Let me tell you, okay? There are two judgments that occur. There's the great white throne judgment, and then there's the judgment seat of Christ. The great white throne judgment is the judgment of all people. You are going to heaven, or you are choosing to go to hell. And then there is the judgment seat of Christ, where you will be rewarded for things that were done in the body, whether good or bad. And that judgment is just for believers. And so these guys, believers in God, but not necessarily believing that Jesus is the Messiah that was promised to them, they're confronted once again with something they can't handle, and that's their own sin. And Jesus, I believe, somehow spiritually confronts them with their own sin by writing in the sand. Something spiritual, something powerful is happening in that moment, and then something even greater happens. They all slip away. Then Jesus stood up again, and he says to this woman, "So where did your accusers go? Didn't even one of them condemn you? Like, you had this whole crowd, like, dragging you around, drag you before me. They're about to kill you. You're crying, you're screaming, you're dirty, you're in tears. They've got you by the hair. And you might even know that you deserve this, like, as in the sense of, she feels guilty, right? And deserving of this punishment. And yet Jesus is there, and he's the only one who has the ability, the qualifications, the authority to judge this woman. He's the only perfect person in this scenario and in every scenario in the Bible. And he's like, where are they? Where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you? And she said, no, Lord. She obviously recognizes right away. She calls him Lord. It could have been just strictly a sir. It could have been just recognizing him as authority. She like, however she meant Lord here, it's still recognizing him as someone greater than herself and even perhaps greater than the crowd that had gathered to bring her to him. And Jesus says, listen, I don't condemn you either. Go and don't sin anymore. Most powerful thing. Like, there's two contrasts here. He says, go, don't do this anymore. Don't continue in this lifestyle. Don't live like this. This is not you. This is not what God has intended for you. This is not the best for you. You are more loved than this. You are more valuable than this. You are just worth so much more. You have no idea. And Jesus is there giving her this and just says, man, believe in yourself a little more. Like stand up for yourself. Like, you're better than this based on how I've created you. Because remember, all things were created through the Word. The Word of God became flesh. Jesus is the Word of God who became flesh. He is the one. He is God. So he's literally talking as God here, and he's giving us God's idea, God's perspective, God's action, God's forgiveness, God's like everything here. So basically what we're seeing him do here is what God would do in this situation. We don't have to wonder what God would do. He's showing us what he would do. He's going to err on the part of grace and mercy before anything. And Jesus says, don't do this. You're not condemned. Just go on, live a better life. You know? You're caught in the situation. What's your next move? Are you going to be so down on yourself? You're just going to all like assume a new identity and to continue in this lifestyle with this new identity, an identity that you've established because of your adultery, because of your sin. A lot of people do that. They botch it up. They mess it up really bad, right? And they continue on in this identity that has this new identity that's been established by their weakness, by their frailty, by their sin, by their passion. They are then basically saying, I really botched it up. I might as well go head like full on into this. I've already opened up Pandora's box, right? So I might as well give up. Let's take a break and come back to this. I was one of those guys that felt so horrible, so guilty, so wrong, so evil for what I did and what I continued to do. A lot of the reason I continued down the path that I did is because I assumed a brand new identity that was destructive and false. And I thought that because I had sinned, I had to give up the identity that God had given me. So basically, as a Christian, you're like, all right, no, let's say a sold out Christian, a guy who truly has faith, a gal, and truly believes and is in church and believes the Bible and loves it. But life just throws you a curveball and you botch it up. You mess up. You feel guilty. You feel ashamed. And you're like, I might as well go into this whole other world that I've contemplated that I wasn't meant for because I'm done with anyway. And you give up and you go there. You feel the accusation from people that you love. And you don't feel like you will ever have opportunity to live a productive life. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But you're thinking all these things and ultimately you just give up. And giving up, you go into a completely different lifestyle. You take on a new identity. You do things in that identity that the person identifies with in that identity. And you just pile one bad activity, one bad behavior, one bad thing upon another. You give in to everything you've ever fought in the past against. You pretty much is like, that's not who I am. I would never do that. I wouldn't live that life, but there's something about it that intrigues me. And all of a sudden you find yourself falling into it. And it's horrible. And every activity that you get into that you never thought you'd see yourself in, it just buries you deeper. It buries you in more and more guilt, more and more remorse, It takes you further away from who you used to be and further away from who God intended you to be. But let me tell you this, you are never so far gone. You feel far. You feel removed. You feel burdened. You feel buried by a multitude of sins. But to God, you're just as close, whether it was one sin or 100 sins or 1,000 sins, you're just as close. You're just as redeemable. It's your perspective. You're buried. You're believing a lie that you can't be unburied or that you'll never have the strength. If you were, let's say this, here's another scenario, and I think this is important, and it's important to me. Let's say God delivers you from that. Yeah, like as in you repent and you're like, I'm not going to do these activities anymore. I'm done doing these things. They haven't gotten me anywhere. And whether God ever accepts me or not, I'm not going to do these things anymore. And so you stop doing them and you feel that from then on forward, it's going to be a new sacrifice, a new type of sacrifice that you're making. And you feel that you'll never be clear-headed again. You'll never be healed again. You'll never be fully forgiven again. You'll never be accepted by God again. You'll never be accepted by others again. And you'll never operate in a mindset where you don't want that for your life. I was at that place where I literally was like, if I turn away from all this stuff, I can't pretend that I don't want it. But you know what? There's something that God does. He does change desires if you let him. But it doesn't mean it's not going to come back and haunt you later on. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have further temptations in the future. It is a sacrifice. I mean, picking up your cross and following Jesus is just that. It's following him, regardless of how you feel. It's a sacrifice. But the thing is he does change us from the inside out. He can change our perspective, our mind. Don't ever believe that he can't, and don't ever believe that you're too far gone, and don't ever believe that you're trapped in that world forever, because you're not. But you have to first and foremost believe it by faith and take hold of it, and then start functioning in the identity that God gave you, not what the world gave you and not what your shame gave you. If Ryan were to operate in the identity that my shame and my failure gave me, I will just continue to repeat that failure and see myself further buried. But if I see myself the way Jesus sees me, as forgiven and loved, I can take on that identity that he's given me, and I can function in that way and be successful in that and be empowered to do the things that he's called me to do if I will only turn away from that other identity that I never wanted perhaps in the first place. Or it was tempting and fun for a season. Not going to lie. Extremely lonely. Tempting, fun, extremely, extremely lonely. Very alone, especially if you are backslidden, if you knew Jesus and then went a different direction. You might not have denied him, but you denied him by your actions. And is he still there for us? Yeah, he's definitely there. You have no idea, man. He is not human. He is God. He is the author of forgiveness and love, the author of life and peace. It's a little different than those of us who were created in his image that were saying, hey, go and do this. This is who I am. It's different whenever you're talking about the actual originator of these things. And so don't give up hope. Let's take a break and come back and close out. The man that Jesus healed at the pool on the Sabbath, who wouldn't get up, crawl into the water himself when the water was supposedly stirred by an angel and healings were taking place. And he's like, I can't get healed because I can't get up fast enough to get in the water on time to be healed. And Jesus is like, dude, really? You've been here this long and still you haven't been able to get in that water. Well, get up. Get up. Take up your sleeping mat. Walk. The guy gets up and he does just that. But what does he tell him later on when he meets him at the temple? He says, go and sin no more, man, because something worse could happen to you. And maybe he would say it just like that. Don't do it anymore, man. Like it's not worth it. Like you're healed. God healed you. Like the power of God, like just completely delivered you. And stay in that place of deliverance. Stay in that place of peace. Stay in that place of healing. Stay in that place of awe, right? For what God has done for you. Don't go back. It wasn't worth it. Don't sin because something worse could happen. And I wonder why he didn't say this to this woman. Like, he's just pretty much is like, go and sin no more. But did he ever emphasize anything further than that, such as like, don't sin anymore because something worse could actually come your way if you do? I think maybe there's a general principle there, though. It's like you experience a deliverance, you experience a sin, but if you throw yourself back in front of a train, you're going to get hit. You throw yourself back in like a raging river. I don't know if you've ever done that. I mean, if you river raft at all, kayak, river kayak or whatever, but man, you can take some good hits and find yourself upside down in that kayak and drowning. And he's like, don't do it. It's not worth it. Don't go there, man. Play it safe. Stick by the rules for your sake, for your sake, for you, right? Nobody condemns you. You're forgiven. Go and sin no more. And if you do, there's going to be consequences, basically, right? Accept the deliverance that only Jesus can provide. Accept the healing that only He gives. Come into that relationship with Him that is by grace, through an exercising of your faith by saying, I believe you, Jesus. I want that for my life. I want you to change my desires. I want you to show me that I don't have to stay in the place where I find myself today. This is the Pillage Pastor. Grace come down for such a sinner as I, and for such a sinner as you.